This is Outside the Round with Matt Barile, a Rage Rowdy podcast.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Outside the Round with me, Matt Barile. Today, a very special guest, a guy that we've known when we used to have to put X's on his hands when he'd have to come out here to Nashville to play our events. He's from the great state of Texas. He's got a new record coming out, Who I Am. It's our man, Aaron McBee.
What's up?
Brother, I haven't seen you in a long freaking time.
It has been a minute. It definitely has been a minute.
It's been like over a year, I think.
I think so. I'm trying to think when we came. I think it was in October, or was it around Valentine's Day? I think we came.
It might have been somewhere. It might have been beginning of the year or something. But either way, it's been a long time since we've seen you. How you been doing?
Yeah. Doing good. Busy. Definitely busy. But yeah, we're kind of moving around a lot.
That's good, man. You still based in Texas?
Yeah, I haven't left yet, so I don't know if I ever will.
No, man. It's one of those states where you really don't have to leave because you have so much there. And
I've always said, if you had problems with one side of Texas, you can just go to the other side and run away from them. It's honestly big enough to leave. And you can do it several times, actually.
Yeah, there's guys that have done that. Where in Texas are you from again?
So it's real central located. No one's going to know it. It's in the middle of nowhere, but it's called Pontotoc.
Pontotoc.
Yeah. It's middle of nowhere, but it's about 2 hours from Austin and about 3 hours from Fort Worth, and it's central, like dead center of Texas.
Yeah, that is a great spot to be, smack dab in between those
you
two.
You think, until every time you have to go to a show, it's a 3-hour or 4-hour drive.
Yeah. And then you're like, that's like 5 minutes in Texas, though. You guys are so freaking spread out. We were just in Irving for a show over the weekend with the Surfside folks, and went to one of Hudson Westbrook shows out at the Music Factory in Irving. And they were like, damn, because they're used to being in Philly. We're used to being here in Nashville. They're like, damn, everything's like 20 minutes apart from each other. Like you go like Dallas, Fort Worth, such a big area. But I'm like, that's just Texas. Shit's just spread out, man.
It's just how it goes.
Yeah, man. So what have you been up to? You've been playing shows, just working on getting this record out, or what?
A little bit of a mix of both. We've had the record done for a little bit now. It was kind of easy because I had all the songs kind of ready to go. And other than that, just playing shows. We went on a run with Gio and the Hired Guns, and that was fun. Definitely a rowdy bunch and fun to play shows with those dudes. And then we've been doing some shows with Cody West, so that's been really fun for us too. And then we also hopped on with Sterling. And we can't not say Sterling.
Yeah, man. I mean, you're part of the Texas music scene is like a giant fraternity.
Yeah.
Whether it's the OGs in the cowboy hats, or it's the guys that continue to go down that lane, or it's the guys that I like to call it the screw you, we're from Texas, we're going to rock. Like Corey Kemp put out a tweet years ago, and I got into some internet arguments with my buddies about it because I had shared it on my Instagram. And Corey basically tweeted, rock and roll didn't die. It just packed its bags and moved to Texas.
Oh, yeah. And, dude, I heard y'all say that on this podcast. And every time I get the chance, I'm like, hey, man, I heard some people say rock and roll hasn't died. It moved to Texas. And I think everybody likes that. Everybody likes it a lot.
Yeah, man. What's it like being a part of that group and kind of being the – now it's like you grow up – in that scene, you grow up watching the Coes and the Pecoses and the Treaty Oaks and those guys. And now you're on that level of putting out music consistently, putting out a whole damn record, being on the road with Gio and the Guns and Cody and another kid coming up in Sterling Elza. What's it like just being a big part and a face of that scene currently?
It's cool. It's definitely it can be hard times because like everybody's so different, but also like they all mix so well. And it's just, it's like friendly competition. You're like, oh man, okay, Treaty Oak just put out a record, we gotta try to beat this, even though they're not gonna come close. But like, dude, Treaty Oak, they're killer, man, and they're really taking over. And Co, I mean, obviously he paved the way. I mean, him and Parker being willing to go to stadiums when people just played bars is probably what really put Texas and rock on the map, and then just allowed us to grow even bigger. And because now you go into music, it's like, well, I'm not gonna play bars the rest of my life. There's a chance I could be in a football stadium. So like, it makes it, it's a lot of fun. And Texas is super inviting. I think a lot of people think it's for like the insiders only and you can only get in there. But I think it was for a long time.
It was
and there
for
was
a
some,
while.
I there remember was some Texas Nashville beef I heard. Yeah. But luckily I grew up in a time where I didn't have to do with that. And so like I've cut every record I've made up here. So it's nice getting to use such talented people and then also get to go back to Texas and everybody's like, not weirded out by it.
Yeah, dude. I mean, yeah, the bridge between the two is more existent and prevalent than it's ever been. Yeah. I remember my first time going out that way. Actually, it would have been the second time because we did Billy Bob's, and the Billy Bob's thing touring back in the day. It was just the best, you know. Oh, yeah. It's a one of a kind place. But I remember being out with Gary and Chuck with the Muscadine guys, and we were opening for Co. And this was back when, this was a little after when they had first gone out there with Co. And believe it or not, Co would come out and open for them in Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi. So it was so like crazy. Muscadine was like, hey, Co, come out here to the Southeast. And Co was like, hey, boys, come out here to Texas. But we did a show. We did Ardmore, Oklahoma, Heritage Hall, and then we did the Bomb Factory in Dallas. Oh, yeah. I remember I was slinging their hats and T-shirts. I remember a guy coming up to me. It was more of an old head. I was like, what's this guy even doing at a 2019 Harold Saul High Edition Co-Wetzel show? But he was like, man, I just can't buy their stuff. They ain't from Texas. And I'm like, what do you mean they ain't? Like, we're here. We're opening for Co-Wetzel, you know? But it was like, that was 2019, and I haven't really seen it since then to where it's been like, where folks, I mean, I do think there's something special about the folks that are in Texas supporting the Texas artists.
Oh, dude, they're some of the best people in the world. I mean, we got lucky. We went on a run with Gio, and we got to go all the way up to New York. And that whole run up there in North Carolina and South Carolina, people were singing our songs, which, you know, we're still small. We're not big. We're doing good. We're not completely off, but we're also on the rise. I hope we are. We're at least
I'd say so, bro.
But it was nice seeing people singing our songs. But when you go to Texas and you get the real, like the real guys, that it's something. I think it's cool because they get to sit there and be like, well, we definitely have something in common with this guy. We live here, and so it gets rowdy and there's a lot more fun. And you know, I'm one of the guys that the second I jump off stage, I'm at the merch booth, and so you get to see who your crowd is. And I do think Texas people are, I think they're appreciative of the chance they get to live in a place that's so vast with music.
All right, so I'm gonna ask you to pick five because three is just not enough. Five of your favorite like club or bars, like not counting like the Billy Bob's or like the big opening slots you've gotten to do, but like the clubs that you've gotten to do in Texas.
In Texas.
Like some of those early spots or those spots where you see it pop up on the touring calendar and you're like, fuck yeah, we're going back here.
I'm gonna have to think, dude. Like, cause I will say a lot of our shows we played were actually out of state. So,
well, I know this. Well, I know just overall, or I'm saying like all time.
Like, I'll say this much: as a band, in 2024, we played 12 shows.
Wow.
And then in 25, we played 12 shows in 2 weeks with Gio.
Wow.
So a lot of my show experiences from the runs with Gio. So it's out of state. But let's say, man, I've never played Billy Bob's, and I refused to walk in Billy Bob's until I think I can sell it out.
That's the way a lot of people are about the Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah, I don't think I can go there and watch it. So I had to pick five venues in Texas that are like...
There's one that I'm like, I know he's going to say this because it's just chaos.
I'm just going so blank.
And you were, I believe you were going there the week or that the weekend following when you played with us at Losers. Because I remember talking with you and your boys about it.
Oh, Silver Saloon?
Yeah.
Yeah. Silver, dude, they treat us so good.
The crowd there is just crazy.
And every time you're there, they've got new screens, new lasers.
Anasalmo just decks it out. Shout out to the Garcia family. Dude. And they hook it up.
And they loved us. Like, we just played there actually with Cody not long ago. And one of the coolest things is we have a setup where we play with white mic stands and pink cables. And they were just freaking out. They're like, dude, this is so cool. Finally, somebody's got something different going on up here. I honestly do think. And plus, Silver, I think, was actually our first full band show, like actual show. It was definitely our first headline show. And we actually had Mac Hankins open up for our first headline show. Shit.
Yeah, another guy to mention in that fraternity.
Got to shout out my Texas boys.
But dude, yeah, there's so many
of you. I think Silver Saloon is definitely one of my top picks. Blue Light in Lubbock.
Yeah.
That's, you cannot leave out Blue Light. Some of my best friend lives in Lubbock, so we go down there and the town's getting burned down. They actually call it the Blur. And then, let's see. I'm going to go with three this time.
Yeah, go with three.
Let me think.
Because there's just so many out there.
I'm trying to think some of our more south places that I've enjoyed a lot.
Have you done the Mavericks circuit yet?
I don't guess.
No, you haven't done Mavericks in Buta or Pflugerville? Mm-mm. Those places are rowdy as shit too.
Man, what's
you've gotten spoiled. You've gotten the reverse thing of usually you have to cut your teeth, but you were just so young where you couldn't even get into those places.
Yeah, a lot of it was that, and then also I think, like I said, we're on the come up, and it's just Texas. Like I said, is full of so many artists, and I also came up in a time where, you know, Gannon and Treaty Oak and those dudes were really popping. So like. unless you're getting open in spots for those dudes, you're digging to try to get the good places, the places worth talking about.
Yeah.
Because, like, I've watched a million shows and loved every second of them, like Larry Joe Taylor Fest.
Yeah.
If I could consider that a bar, it'd be on my list, dude. Because, I mean, that whole weekend is just beer.
Yeah.
And it is crazy out there. But, dude, yeah, we got lucky. And then Gio just being such a good dude. I mean, like, he is like a brother to us. He took us in, and, I mean, he showed us the road right there. And that was our first experience to the roads. So, when it comes, I think... One, the last bar in Texas I think I could possibly pick might have to be, got me on a spot right here.
I did. I didn't mean to do that this early. Take a sip of your Whataburger, your Texas juice, and that might inspire you.
Let's see.
It's the most Texas thing of all time.
Maybe Trees in Dallas. I think that Trees. Was cool. Trees. It's a rock venue, and so it's cool when you walk in there and you know some big bands have played there. Yeah, Whataburger definitely helped. Reminded me where I'm from.
That'll do it, man. That'll do it, man. What was it like leaving Texas and getting to go out on the road with Gio? Like, where were some of those early stops?
Dude, we were so pumped. So, I actually have a Winnebago. We call it the What a Big Ho. It's RV, and so we all loaded up. I think it comfortably... Like, if you want to sleep it, four people's nice. We had six. And so somebody was sharing a bed. So we took off on the road, dude. And at the time, all the guys were just, like I said, we were so pumped to go out there. And one of, I think, our favorite stops on that run was the Rave in Milwaukee.
Oh, bro.
Dude, getting to go in the pool, man, that is life-changing. Yeah, I walked in there, and it was like, everybody says, like, oh, it's spooky. And I was like, I don't know if it's spooky, dude, but it definitely, the weight of everybody before you is just standing on your shoulders.
What room did you guys play in?
So, I want to say it was just the, I know there's, we didn't play the big room.
Yeah, the ballroom.
We didn't play the ballroom, and I think we played one of the smaller rooms in there with Gio. But, like I said, it was packed in there. It was a good crowd. And actually, I think that night, another band was playing in the room right next to us.
Yeah, that's what's special about that place. The intersection in Grand Rapids is another one like that. The Midwest does a great job of, for whatever reason, they're like, let's just put as many stages in this building as we can and do multiple shows. When going back to the Muscadine days, we did the Rave Eagle Club, and there was a DJ named Galantis that was upstairs in the ballroom. So as we were loading out, it was just the whole building was shaking with the bass, just boom, ba boom, ba boom, ba boom. You had kids like dangling out the windows upstairs. That's like nice. It was wild, man.
Yeah, and then they got like the hotel right next door that's where like Jeffrey Dahmer killed those people. And you're like, And it was so funny because I just watched that series.
Oh, really?
And then you look out the window, and you're like, oh, okay, that's where we're at. Maybe we shouldn't. This place is super haunted. Like, it's not good. But, like I said, I loved it.
Where in New York were you?
In New York?
Were you in New York City? You said you were
Yeah, we did go to New York. So we played at, I think it was Mercury Lounge.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Dude, so actually the other day I just saw Co had posted a picture. The first time that they played in Nashville or New York was there.
Yeah.
And now they went back and played Madison Square Garden Party.
Bro, I saw Luke Combs in that room.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Dude, it was so odd. They had two bands before us.
Yeah.
So we couldn't even have our gear in there. And it was kind of like such a tight place to like survive in.
Yeah.
That we were like, you know, honestly, let's do a real throw and go. We used the house amps they had there, just plugged our guitars in. At that time, my guitar player just left. He was getting off the road with us. And believe it or not, he's now the bass player for Treaty Oak, which love Dakota to death, man. I have to shout that boy out.
That's awesome.
He's cool as hell. But we were running a four-piece for the first time that night, which honestly, I don't think there was room for a five-piece.
Four-piece works out in the Mercury Lounge, especially as an opener.
And I mean, it was just crazy, man. That whole run, so we did the first 2 weeks, and it was like, oh man, we've learned so much. Like, let's apply this to the next run. We did not. we still had some issues to figure out, but luckily we got through it. And like I said, we came back and it was such a great experience. But yeah, New York, that Mercury Lounge was cool.
Where'd you park the Winnebago in New York? How many tickets did you get?
So I didn't get any tickets.
Wow, so impressive. That's unheard of.
Yeah, so we had a TM that we were running with, and long story short, we had to let him go. And so I had to take over the role of driving. Of course, I could have picked a different time, but I picked it in North Carolina. So we went from North Carolina to Washington and then to New York. And I drove that Winnebago. It's a 30-foot RV that's 12-foot tall into New York. I keep saying Nashville. And let me tell you, Gio's team, Jerry, his guitar player, walks up to me and goes, man, That's some real cowboy stuff. Exactly what he said to me, dude. Because, I mean, driving an RV like that in New York, you can't go down certain roads.
Yeah.
All the bridges are super low. And so that is my, when people ask me, what's it like driving that thing? I'm like, it's never going to be worse than New York.
No.
And I actually parked in a spot. We didn't get any tickets. My biggest fear was getting booted. I will say, I definitely pulled like an Austin Powers move. People were right on my bumper of the RV and right on my trailer. And I had to do the old tap, 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 tap until I got out. But, never happened, never found me, so far we're going, and the toll roads are still catching up to me, but yeah, we survived.
There's a lot of them up there, bro. Isn't it crazy?
I think I got them paid off, and then all of a sudden I get another letter in the mail saying there's a toll I haven't paid, and it's like New Jersey or something. I'm like, yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah, dude, it's wild. Like, we have a thing up there, it's called Easy Pass, mm-hmm. and you put it in like the mirror or in the front of your car, and it's like essential to have because there's so many tolls, and just load it up at the beginning of the month. And
my question is, so there's the Texas toll with like as the yellow T, and there's Easy Pass. I'm like, so am I supposed to buy all of these and just keep them in the windshield?
If you're going all over the place, I mean, once you get into the bus, it becomes the bus drivers handle that shit. Yeah. But yeah, there's a lot of them. And then you got the Peach Pass down in Georgia. Easy Pass goes down to Florida, and they got their Florida version of it and all that, man. So tell me about this record, Who I Am.
Dude, so...
And I want to go through it with the tracks. I know not all of them are out yet. You've got a good chunk of them out, but how many songs do we got on this thing?
It's going to be 12. I think we're just about halfway on all the songs out. So a lot of them... One of it was like, we need a place for a home. We need a home for some of the music we put out. And then also just, I want people to hear these musics. I want to play them just as fast as possible. I mean, we're honestly playing half the record, if not more than half the record, live, just because I love the song so much. But it's called Who I Am. That's the title track of the record. And Who I Am is like, I think I finally sat down and wrote a song that was actually meaningful to me. And then told the truth. Because we got Midnight Dancers by a Stripper and Side Bitch and all those songs. And they're just, they're funny. They're fun to have. Like, I loved them when I wrote them, but you grow up. And like, I once heard Co was actually talking in an interview. I don't know who said it. I don't think it was him, but he once heard that be careful what you sing, be careful what you write, you might sing it the rest of your life. And I think I kind of started thinking about that a lot more. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go to this record and I'm going to try to write something that like would really just hit home. And actually around the same time, my mom passed away. And so like my world has flipped upside down. So I was like, okay, let's write a good song. And one of the few things she said to me was to stop cussing so much. And so I went and wrote Who I Am literally like I think the next week.
Wow.
And it's about my pops, losing my pops and then losing her, and just kind of telling that story a little bit. And like, it's just, I just tried to be as real as possible. And then I deep dived Cody West's live album, and I listened to that thing over and over. Like, when I tell you we do these shows with him, it's because I'm a massive fan. Like, rain or shine, I would be there.
He's one of those guys that paved the way, and he's somebody that doesn't get talked about out of Texas as much as he should.
So underrated, man. Like, he's like one of the best, I think, and one of the best songwriters I've heard, because I'm huge in post-grunge. I love Seether, Stain, Thrice, like bands like that. And so, like, they just are who I absolutely adore listening to. But then I can get the same kind of vibe from listening to Cody West.
Yeah.
Like, he's got these kind of just like real hidden words. It's not like the country you hear nowadays where it's like, oh, I went to this bar and I had a beer and I danced with a girl in a red dress. Like, it's
even
hidden.
Like the sad songwriter shit that the Americana guys are doing, you know. It's different from that, you know. It's probably closer to that than it is the mainstream party country stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And so I just got to listen to those dudes and like really deep dive Seether, because they're like one of my favorite bands, and I was just trying to be a better writer. I think a lot of it's just me trying to be a better songwriter, because inevitably I would love to write songs for other people too, and like just be in the room.
Yeah.
And so, I think the new record's more or less just me trying to grow into what I've become and be the real person I am.
Yeah. Tell me about Hope, the first song on here. We're going to go through the whole freaking list.
Yeah. So Hope is, I was literally trying to write something as so cryptic as you could, like, I don't want it to tell you every line. Like, I don't want you to look at it and be like, oh, yeah, it's exactly what it's about. No. So I tried to write it as crazy as I could. And it literally goes, I'll climb to the top of the mountains and I'll jump so I land on the plains. So when the trees call for me, I don't have to beg for their shade, is one of the lines in it. And it's like super crazy. And like the first line is, I'll literally tell you the whole song. It's like, I've won every fight I relived in the shower. is one of the first lines, and everybody loves that when I sing it. But yeah, that's hope, and hope's strictly just about like really trying to play with the words and try to be different. That's what that song's all entitled for.
Is there a reason you put that as the first song on the project?
Probably because I think it's the turning point in my writing. I told a lot of people too that Hope was the first song I wrote trying to do the swap, like doing something a little different. And I think it was like, once I wrote that, I was like, okay, I can do this song. So
yeah. And then we talked about Who I Am. Tell me about one that's been out for a while, Tied to You.
Dude, so
knife, man.
Dude, so
man, well, very relatable for a lot of folks out there.
What's so funny too is like where that idea came from. Like I was watching TikTok, and I mean, or Reels probably. I'm a big Reels guy.
Me too.
And yeah. So I was scrolling Reels, and like there was this video talking about this thing called a red string theory. I dig too deep into some things, and so it was like red string theory or something like that. And so I was like, what is this about? And it was talking about how there's supposed to be like a symbolic red string that ties you to your, like, almost like a destiny. Like there's something that ties you to where you're going. And so at the time I was talking to a girl, and it felt like everything I did, I was going to see her in some way or another. I was going to think about her, and it felt like I was tied to her, and I just, like, it was an unbreakable thing. And so it's kind of like, I feel tied to you, and she holds the knife. Like I couldn't cut the rope if I wanted to. She's got the knife, and she's just trying to slice it open. I just, no matter what, I'm feeling stuck. So
what ended up happening?
You know, she moved on.
It happens. It happens. Does that
there's a rope still very much around my neck, but it's definitely, she's walked off with the, you know, the rest of it.
Same girl apply to Numb?
No. So Numb I've had for 2 years, actually.
Yeah.
I actually, so some of my buddies over at Double B, they have a weekend where we go and like hang out and just be boys and have fun. And I actually was writing Numb when I got there, and Sam came out from Treaty Oak, and I played it like in a little acoustic song swap. It was me, him, and a couple of our buddies, and he was like, man, I really like that song, and he said that. He may not remember it, but I went home. I was like, I got to finish this tune. And so I literally had to like write one more verse on it, and it's just sat in my phone for 2 years, and then finally I was like, you know, I think this record would really do good for it, and so we put it out there, and it's literally like trying to find your vice, just getting away from everything.
Yeah.
So I've loved that song a lot.
What's it like being so young and singing? You've gone through hardships in your life.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And I'm so sorry for the loss of your mom and your dad and all of that, man. But what do you think leads you to writing about serious shit? Even in the songs where you're cussing, you're singing about darkness, bro.
Yeah,
like
dude.
you're a happy dude. Like every time I've been with you, you've been smiling and having a good time. But, like, where do you get the darkness from? Like, how does that trickle into the music and the writing?
I think a lot of it has to do with the setting I'm in when I'm writing. I'm still in the house I've been growing up in. You know, it's me and my grandpa now, which I call my mom. She's my grandma. It was my dad's mother, but she raised me, so I call her mom. And so I'm still there, and, dude, I'm just, you know, I am pretty happy most days, but there's days where you're like, it just sucks, and you got nothing better to do but sit down and write a song. And so I think a lot of my music is just where I'm coping. I'm not writing to people. I think a lot of my early stuff was maybe just having fun with it and didn't know how to talk about myself.
But was still singing about some dark shit.
Yeah, dude, yeah. But it wasn't as – I think a lot of it's gotten a little darker. Maybe I'll make a happier album one day.
Yeah.
But it's I find it like a little therapy.
But but the thing is the dark stuff, like people – feel good listening to it. It helps people. I'm sure you've gotten countless messages and DMs and folks talking at the merch table about this song is very important to me, whatever song it is, because you've got a big catalog out already.
Yeah, and it feels nice to have a lot of songs to pick from too. But like Who I Am, I play that bare bones acoustic, like my guys,
as you should.
Yeah, all my guys walk off stage, and while we love how it sounds recorded, it's just been so fun to walk up there and I tell a story about how I lost my mom and dad and like really just make it a tearjerker. And then I don't give any hope. I just leave it at that, super depressing, and then I sing this song. And a lot of people come up and be like, dude, I lost my pops like weeks ago. And they're like, dude, it meant the world to me that you wrote something like that. And I think that's the best thing I could have heard, because for so long I just didn't want to tell people what was going on in my life. Yeah. It like I have super dark humor, so like it would come out and like a laughing sense, and everybody's like, oh, how do you laugh to that? And you kind of go on with your day. And so I was like, okay, I should probably write a song so people at least know it's coming.
Yeah.
And so I finally wrote down Who I Am.
Yeah, tell me about Pick a Side.
Dude, so that's one of my band's favorite songs.
And I'm guessing it's heavy then.
It's not heavy at all, actually.
Oh, really?
Dude, it actually sounds like a swung country song, dude.
Wow. Crazy.
But it's just so a little different, man. It's kind of like to be taken two ways. It could be like, I don't want to pick a side between two girls. Or it could be, I don't want to pick a side between a girl and like alcohol or something like that. Whatever you're going to. And so, yeah, man, I think I wrote that maybe a year or so ago. And one of the bass player I had at the time, Chug is what we called him. He actually played Losers with us.
Yep, I remember
Scream,
Chug.
Dude. So he was like, dude, this is going to be the song. This is going to be the song. Kept telling me. And eventually he got off the road and we kept going on shows and it came time for the record. And I was like, I don't know. I think I'm going to use this one song. And I was like, that has nothing to do with me at all. How am I going to title this Who I Am and use this other song? It was called Kurt's Last Breath. It's about Kurt Cobain. And I was like, I can't play that song on Who I Am. I got to pick a different one. And I was like, pick a side sitting right there, done and ready to go. So I threw it on the record. And like I said, it is completely different sounding, but it's cool.
Yeah. What I Always Do.
That one is probably my favorite.
Really? All right.
So it is sad, sad. It sounds sad. It's written about the same girl as that Red String Theory thing. She actually is from Nashville, and she's terrible, terrible.
I tell all my buddies, you come down here, you're going to have a good time, but you'll probably fall in love and get your heart broken. I tell all my boys back home in New York, you come down here, just be careful. You know?
No, they're not lying. But I wrote that, and I saw this thing, man, like as a person, you know, you love, you're a lover, you know, most people are, at least I know I am for a fact. And one thing about people is we're just like plants. You can over, like, water them.
Yeah.
And you can be too much. And bro, I'm not saying, like, I was fucking.
Bro, yeah. I've been there, dog.
Dude, I'm not, like, my band tells me all the time, man, like, you got to get a little game, dude. Like, you got to be a little more, like, you know, secretive. And I'm like, nah, dude, I'm telling you straight up, hey, I love you. The second day I see you. If I mean it, I mean it.
Yeah.
And so just like that, man, you just, you know, you find yourself in relationships where you're all in and they're not. And you kind of just drown the flower out and, like, it just dies on you. So it's just like what I always do. It's about finding a relationship and really being all in. And maybe the other person is just a little hesitant and you kind of overwater that and it inevitably doesn't work out.
Yeah. Yours to Give.
It's another good one. Same girl. I wrote all these, like, in the span of, like, a month. Yours to Give is – I got to think about that one for a second. It's been a little bit since – I think we played that every show. It's talking about giving up my heart to a girl, and it's like, you do with it as you please. You can break it, you can love it. It is yours to do with, and so it's a pretty cool song. I like Yours to Give a lot. It's definitely fun, and it's heavy. It's got a 7-string guitar in it, so it got a little grungier. And actually, Hope, I like yelling Hope, so going back to Hope.
Yeah, that's cool, dude. Phone Call Away. Now we'll get to some of the stuff that's been out for a little bit.
Yeah, Phone Call Away. You know, as a person, you've heard a million times, call me if you need me. And how many times have you called and that answer didn't pick up?
Yeah, right?
You hear it a million times. You hear it from everybody at least once in your life, call me if you need me. And if you did, they probably wouldn't answer. And that's really what that was. It's just, you know, constantly hearing the same thing and calling them up and going to voicemail. And you're like, you know what? You know, if I really would have needed you, you weren't there. And so that's what call me if you need me is. Yeah. I actually wrote that in Nashville, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Who'd you write that? Was that a co-write?
No, I just did it by myself.
How many co-writes have you done? You seem like a guy it's just you, your band, and your producer.
Pretty much, dude. And even, like, when it comes to, like, my band, I want to do more with them, but I'm so bad about just locking myself off and writing a song, and then we just go straight to Nashville with it and produce it. But I think I've done 3 co-writes ever.
Wow.
Yeah, and they've all been like, or no, they weren't all with the same person, but I did one with Michael Whitworth and Dan Pellerin with Davis. Or,
yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm saying, yeah. And so we cut Broken Hometown with them, and then Jake Partial has been most of my stuff, and yeah. They call him the next Joey Moy. So
Jake is very good at what he does, man.
Oh, dude, he, like I said, man, he's been cutting them since Midnight Dancer came out, and he progressively, we figured out what we're going
to do. How'd you get connected to him?
Dude, I, like, was talking to my label who I have now up here, and we're talking about getting signed, and they're like, who would you like to use? And at that time, Excuse the Messages
came
out.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, dude, whoever produced this killed it. I got to find out who this guy is. And it was Jake. And so I eventually was like, whoever did this, this is who I want to use. And my label was like, okay, like, we'll get in contact. And they, you know, you always like, well, you sure you don't want to try anybody else? And I'm just diehard Jake, man. I don't know if I could go to anybody else. He just has killed every single song we've done.
That's awesome, man. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
No, and they just keep getting better.
And he's growing as a producer too.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Excuse the Mess was like early in his thing too.
Yeah,
like,
man.
He's still, you and him are kind of getting to grow together.
Yeah, which and it's
is
been
very
super
exciting.
Dope.
You know, you don't always get that with an artist and a producer.
Yeah. And I, like I said, man, I'm diehard. I don't think there'll ever be a record I make that doesn't have at least, if I got to use somebody else, it's going to be because I have to. And maybe it's because Jake gets so swamped someday. But he'll always have a hand in at least one song if that's all I can get.
That's awesome, dude. That's awesome. What's it like being in a room with him? Like I've hung out with him at the bars and stuff, but what's his vibe in the studio?
Man, he's always gonna ask you how you're doing, what you got going on in your life. You're not gonna walk in the studio and just go straight to work. He's gonna sit there and you're gonna cut up for a second. He's like genuinely caring person and he wants to know what you got going on, but the second it's grinding mode, it's on. And he's sitting there playing that guitar over and over until he finds the right riff. And so he's definitely locked in.
Do you prefer recording at a certain time of day? You seem like a guy that would like recording at night. I know a lot of those rock producers. Like I think of like our buddy Andrew Bayless.
Yeah.
Bayless is like a night, like he's like a vampire where he likes working late at night.
Yeah, so that's what I meant. Not Davis, but
yeah,
Bayless. God, dude. Yeah, so I think most of mine have... Because, like, Jake, I'll get to Jake's house, and it'll be lunchtime. And he's like, dude, I just woke up. I'm like, what did you do? He goes, I was up to, like, 3 in the morning producing.
And I'm like, a lot of those guys just like working at night.
It's just easy. Like, dude, I can understand for Jake, dude, because he was on the road with, you know, Jacob Bryant and those boys. After a certain while, dude, you're used to waking up late and staying up, you know, until early in the morning. So, like, I think it's easier, and I think... Right when you wake up, you're tired. You already know you're tired. But about halfway through the day, maybe after lunch, you get in 2 o'clock, you're wide awake. And that's when you start wanting to do stuff, especially for us as, you know, musicians and artists.
Yeah. Yeah, bro. I feel that. What about over you?
Oh, dude. Yeah, it's just getting over a girl, man. You just got to get
over a lot of heartbreak out here, man. you're a romantic that just hasn't found the right chick yet.
I guess not. And what's terrible is I'll probably find the right girl, marry her, and still write songs about bitches. So who knows, dude? Yeah. Yeah, it's just talk about getting over somebody.
That's awesome. My name.
That one was co-write. And so I wrote that with Jordan Centers and Mike. Is it Mike Thau? I'm not 100% sure.
I'll pull it up real
Jimmy
quick.
Jimmy Thau. Yeah, Jimmy Thau, and then Jake Partial.
Yeah.
And so we wrote that together, and dude, it was fun. It was one of the, I actually had part of the song kind of written out, and then we took it in there and kind of, you know, really polished it up, and it was just a fun experience. But it's about, like, going out to a bar, meeting a girl, falling in love with her, and you wake up the next morning, you're not even sure if she remembers your name. You're like, do you even know who I am? Like, you sure you know who I am? Like, it's just something you think of. Wake up in the morning, you're like, do I even know her name? You're like, she don't say nothing. You're waiting for like a sign. You got to take her to Starbucks and tell her to get a drink and see if she puts it on there.
Yeah. What a trick.
Yeah, dude.
That's a good little hack right there.
I wouldn't claim that as mine. I definitely saw it somewhere else, but it's smart. It's super smart.
That is smart, dude. Always raining.
I wrote that song, and I swear, in Texas, it nearly flooded. It, like, I put it out, and it, like, rained for three weeks.
Wow.
It's really just talking about, believe it or not, a bad relationship. Like, it's just always something. It's always rain. It's never, like, shining. You can't get away from it no matter what you do. It's like if you held an umbrella, it's still raining under the umbrella. And so it's just what it's about. It's always having something going on with your relationships. Yeah.
And then closing track, Never Again.
Yeah, and that's just never doing stupid shit again.
Yeah.
You know, like, I've dated girls, and you're always thinking about going back. Maybe they've gone and done what they did and thought, you know, maybe I want to go back for a second chance. And, you know, wishing you just known what you know now, you wouldn't do it again.
Yeah.
And so that's what that one's about. A lot of people love that song, too.
Yeah, man. I mean, it goes and does its thing, man. You get to close out this year going back to Texas. You got San Angelo coming up. You got... Fort Worth, Austin, Gonzales in April. I'm sure there'll be a bunch of dates coming in. Like,
oh, yeah.
Are we thinking we'll be on the road next year as much as we were this year?
Dude, I hope we're more. If I could go 100 shows next year, I'd be pretty happy. So If the more shows, the better. That's all I want to do is play shows.
Just put miles on the Winnebago. What is it? The
Winnebago. Yeah.
The Winnebago. Just take the Winnebago everywhere.
Yeah, dude. I wanna wear that bus out. So.
That's awesome, man. That's exciting. What's it? How often are you getting up here to Nashville?
It just kind of varies, really. Like this week, we came up here to do podcasts and talk on news about the record coming out. And so,
how's that been? You look like you were in. Where were you earlier today? You were on some news channel or. Like a legit TV set or something.
I cannot remember the name of it. Channel 4? Is that what it was?
You were on, is this your first time doing a lot of this type of stuff?
Yeah, I got here Sunday. Monday we went and did one. I've never done a live, like, news thing, and I did my first one up here in Nashville. Got on there, and they were like, yeah, that sounded good. How many have you done before? I'm like, this was the first one. They're like, wait, really? I'm like, yeah. Like, did I do good? They're like, yeah, you did great. And then we went and did a second one later that day. And then, obviously, I did the one this morning. I played a lot. I just played a song this morning. But, yeah, it's been super cool. Definitely different. So, and I think we're trying to get some down in Texas, too. So, hopefully, we do a little press week down there as well.
That's good, man. I mean,
I'm just trying to get these songs as big as possible.
Yeah, dude. But man, I mean, it's got to be a cool feeling to, like, take me back to when you got your start. Like, when you decided, because I met you, you were what, 19 or 20?
I was 19 still.
You were 19?
Or 20. I was 20.
I think you were 20. Mm-hmm. But how long had you been doing it before that, or was that kind of when things started going?
I've always sang. I mean, since I was a little kid, I sang. And then, like I said, my dad passed away, and I remember in eighth grade, there was like a little performance thing you could do. You either act like an idiot, or you actually show up and try to show out. I was going to be a dumb professional bull rider. My buddy was going to be the bull. It was going to be a whole thing. That fell through drastically. Well, I came home. I was kind of upset. You know, I'm an eighth grade kid who was trying to do something funny that just fell through. And yeah. My mom was actually, so we'd gone to a medium. Everybody talked so crazy about him. But this lady just talked about my dad and like talked about things that we went through in life that she could have never known. And one of the things she said my dad was speaking to me was to use my voice when I'm angry. And I was coming home really frustrated. My mom was sitting on the floor in the closet reading those papers. I mean, just tears in her eyes. And I came home and I read those and I was like, you know, I've always sang. Why don't I just sing a song? And so I think that's what really started it. Because after that, I started taking like lessons from a real nice couple in San Saba. And, you know, she taught me how to breathe. And then it wasn't very long that it was kind of like, hey, look, I can't show you much more. Like, my husband teaches guitar. You know, you could try to learn that from him. And I was like, anything to just keep doing this. And so I picked up a guitar, and he was teaching me sheet music, and I just couldn't do it. So I went home and wrote a song, and that's actually my first two songs on Spotify. I think they're terrible, but it's called Dear Future Ex-Wife and Cigarettes Burning Out. And those are some deep dives on Aaron McPhee if you want to ever hear them. But they're definitely a young kid who was listening to a lot of, like, big on Carson Jeffrey then and like those dudes, and so I like wanted to be country, but I still had like a little bit of my rough lyrics too. So it was, that's what really started it. Was I think I turned 16. I just got my license and went and bought a guitar, and so I started really playing shows then, and they were just like little acoustic things.
Dude, I mean, it makes sense that you're trying to figure out who you are at a young age, and you're trying to, you grow up listening to rock, but you're enthralled with what's coming up out of the Texas country scene. Yeah. And the world shut down.
Yeah.
Like, you're figuring all this out. I mean, granted, you were in Texas. Those things were different down there than a lot of other places. But that's a weird time to be 17, 18, 19 years old and figuring out, what am I going to do with my life?
But the nice thing, too, like you talk about, we can bring up COVID and stuff, is when they shut down school, we went home.
Oh, you just did music. Yeah.
Yeah, all I had to do was play guitar. And in that time, like, I was never great at football. I played, but I messed up my ankle and decided it wasn't my thing anymore. I literally told my head coach, look, man, I appreciate every opportunity, but it's best I play, you know, music, because I can't jam my fingers up or get hurt and not be able to stand on stage. And I think my coach, I literally told me, he goes, I was the first kid he ever had give him a reason that he actually was like, you know what, I understand, I actually believe in this. So and all in that time frame, dude, it was just easier to do music. And I also grew up 30 minutes from town. Like, when I was a kid, nobody was coming to hang out. I was going to hang out. And so having a guitar and, you know, all the stuff I had to deal with growing up, it was just easier just to play music and just kind of escaping that.
Yeah, I think it explains like why a lot of the kid, a lot of the, I mean, you're not a kid. I mean, you are. You're 22.
Yeah, still young. Yeah.
Yeah, you're younger than me, being 30, almost 31 here. But it's like, you guys sing about sad and dark shit. Like, just as a collective, I feel like it took them. Now we're starting to get back into like the happier stuff.
Yeah.
But it's like, as a collective, like the class and the crop that was coming out between 2020 to 2022 was just sad stuff. Like, I think of like, I got the old 60 poster behind mm-hmm. you. They're like, Smoking a Light is dark shit. The Zach Bryan kind of revolution, the Sam Barber stuff. And I know that's not quite your lane.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like, I feel like everybody was trying to put out like what they were feeling, which was super authentic and super cool, but it's sad shit.
Very, dude. And like, even the early stuff, dude, I think a lot of it was just I had feelings and I just wasn't applying them. And so it came out one way or another. And dude, it's one thing when you're writing a song is it's always easy to say it's about a girl. Everybody's going to get that. And so I was like, I'm not going to write about my dad and my mom. Like, no one wants to hear that. Like, that's sad. And I'll write a sad song about a girl. And I was like, you know, honestly, I'm going to keep singing these sad songs. I might as well just tell them what's really going on.
Yeah.
Tell them what's wrong with me.
yeah, dude, who you are.
Yeah,
like,
literally.
That's, again, the title of this record. It makes so much sense.
Exactly, man.
Now in 2025, you're able to really tell people who Aaron McBee is.
Yeah.
Like, it makes a lot of sense. And it's cool seeing that progression, man. What headspace were you in when you write a song and you put out a song like Bloodstained Nose Ring? Because that is a banger live. That's one that stands out. Like our era of doing our Wednesdays over at mm-hmm. Losers, your performance is one that stands out. It's funny. A lot of the Texas guys like you, Mac Hankins, Cole Barnhill, like Braden Stewart, like your performances stand out because they were just so fucking heavy.
Dude,
and that's one. And Bloodstained Nose Ring is one that I remember watching you and the boys in that room just rocking in that tiny little stage with the low ceilings, you know? But take us back to that one.
Dude, what's so funny too is like, I don't know what was going on that I was like, you know, I'm gonna write the song about Coke, you know? I've never been a drug guy.
You don't strike me as somebody that's done, I mean, I'm sure you've seen it around, but that's not your thing.
Yeah, no. So like, actually, my real mom, she was, you know, she was an addict. And it was never around in my life. And so, like, I always grew up with the montage of, like, I'm never going to do that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it. Never touched it once. I'm not a big drinker. You know, never done that. Smoked a little weed because that shit's good. But
yeah,
like,
agreed.
It's green and good for you.
Agreed. Absolutely. It's organic.
They tried to get me to get vegetables, man. I just wanted that. Yeah. you know, Bloodstained, dude, maybe it was, like, some way of connection to what I, you know, don't know. And, like, it just felt like, you know, in the music scene, you're going to be surrounded by it. It's everywhere, dude. If you've never been at a table and a line wasn't there and you're in music, you've been with a weird crowd.
Yeah,
Man, I couldn't tell you what sparked that idea, but it the second it was written, it was done. It started and it was done. And so it's always been like such a song I remembered.
Yeah, and it takes me back to, like, you talk about being a fan of post-grunge, and we like to call that stuff butt rock. That's like the Razor Audi
term
for it.
I definitely don't mean like Nickelback. I'm definitely meaning some like.
Well, you're talking like Seether, like POD, like things more in that lane.
Yeah, definitely.
As opposed to like Nickelback and Creed, you're talking.
Yeah.
You're talking like Crossfade, like bands like that.
Stained, like
yeah,
guys
Stained,
like
to me we lump all that together because all those bands toured together.
Yeah,
they were all part
of
the same scene. Just like you're different from Mac and Sterling and Cody and Cole and Treaty. You know, but you guys are all, when people look back, they're going to call it, this was Texas, this was where Red Dirt Music switched to rock and roll.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true. That's fair. Yeah. I'll give you that.
No, that's what we like to call it. But it's cool. Like, I can see the influences of, like, the post-grunge stuff and, like, that era of, like, just, because I remember listening to Pandora when I was doing my homework listening to that stuff. Like, the late 90s, early 2000s rock was just special, man. Your melodies, it makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I would hope so. I want it to shine through, so.
Yeah, what do you like doing when you're not doing music stuff? You've been so busy with all this over the past year, but what does Aaron McBee like doing when he's not doing music shit?
Dude, I love getting tattoos.
Yeah, what's up with the fives on your neck? Because I just noticed that.
A lot of people ask me, man. I've told everybody the same thing. I'm in a gang. It's called the Triple Cincos. We're the craziest in Texas. It's a complete lie. But it's actually angel numbers. And so they say fives are supposed to symbolize a positive change in your life. You know, real TikTok, you know, crystal bitch kind of mentality. But I liked it. I thought it was cool. It was funny. I went and got this in Texas across my neck. And I told my mom, yeah, it's going to just be behind my ears. I walked out of there and they were down my neck and I was like, a little bit bigger, but you know, that's everything's fitted for Texas. You might as well get the biggest you can go. And
yeah.
Then progressively started filling up my arms and so.
So were those your first tattoos were on the neck?
No. So I got the angel wing first.
Okay.
And then my second tattoos were my neck, my thumb, and then my forearm.
Wow. So that's a bold, for number two to be double-sided on the neck, I feel like it's a big jump. That's just jumping off the deep end, just going for it.
Yeah, I got all of them in the same session, but these were the first ones we started with. Man, I knew what I wanted. Since first grade, dude, when my dad passed away, I always wanted this angel wing tattoo. And there's a Radney Foster song that talks about, it's Godspeed, Sweet Dreams.
Yeah.
And he talks about sending his love on angel wings. And I grew up wanting this tattoo from then. And then I got an Ink Masters. Love that show, dude. I'm a big drawer. Like, you talk about free time, dude. I draw all the time. I have a journal. It's full of them. We've had actually people come up and take pictures of it and then get it tattooed. And so that's, if I could tattoo in a past life, I would have. And so that's a lot of my free time is drawing. But, dude, I was like, I watched Ink Masters growing up. And I was like, dude, I soon as I can, I'm getting them. And I went like a whole year after being 18, didn't get any. And I think right around 19, I went and got my angel wing and then progressively after that. And like, I'm pretty sure as soon as I get back to Texas, I'm getting another appointment. I got some more stuff I need to get done.
I gotta hook you up with my man, Mike Stoll.
Oh, I know Mike. Mike did my angel wing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No shit.
Dude, so Mike started tattooing the same year and month my dad passed away. And you're talking about fives. We finished at 555.
Wow.
Yeah, no, Mike Stoll was the first guy I ever got a tattoo from. Everything else has been done by one guy in Texas.
Was that, where did Mike ink you up at?
I couldn't even tell you. It was a
shop. Was it in Texas?
It was in Nashville.
Oh, it was here.
I flew.
Oh, it was when he was still living here. Okay,
dude, it was like, I think my label said it was like my birthday present to me or something. My label actually covered the cost of it.
That's so sick.
Yeah, right? You know, artists, you know, was it the looks of an artist? I guess you write that off some way or another.
Yeah.
I definitely try to. But first tattoo I got was from Mike Stoll.
Yeah, he's the man. He's been like Ray's Rowdy family. Him and Nikki T go way back.
And, oh yeah, and like I heard he tattooed Hardy at his wedding, and I was like, dude, I gotta get a guy like this.
Hardy, Ed Sheeran, Earn, I mean Ella.
He's done
a bunch of people. Like Mike is the dude.
I find it cool to say I got one of the tattoos, and my biggest one actually so far is from him.
Yeah, we at Tailgate and Tall Boys, it's become like a theme now where he comes every year and he just sets up backstage. And
I think
this past year he tattooed like, I don't know if he tattooed Jesse, but he tattooed all of Jesse Murph's people.
That's it.
You know, like when he just sets up and just has the chair and he's just hanging out backstage in the lounge. Like
that's a lot better than like having somebody like Ko back there with a tattoo gun. Because have you seen what he did to like the guy who runs Canes?
Yeah.
That's rough, man. I'm just saying like... I love my tattoos. I take them detailed. So
yeah, do we think there'll be a tattoo gun in your future on the road?
Oh, 100%. Now, I will say I won't touch my arms. I've literally told my tattoo artist, other than the angel wing, I'll be a walking billboard for him. I don't think I'll go to anybody else, man. He's done me right, done all my tattoos good. They've been great, treats me well. So I'll let him keep the arms, and if I get a tattoo gun, it'll be on the legs.
Well, tattoo gun, like it could go on the legs, but I'm saying you could tattoo other people.
I'd be down.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you like drawing. You're already halfway there.
Yeah, I guess you're true. If I didn't think I would mess it up, then yeah. It'd have to be somebody who I'm like super close with or someone I really don't know. And never see him again. You're like, oh, you know.
Yeah, I think it's more fun when it's one of your boys or somebody that you know.
For sure.
You know, so who would you say are like some of your close homies like coming up, you know, like where... Like, you're like obviously you have the close connections with like Gio and Cody and Sterling from being on the road, but like, who are some guys that have kind of helped you out or like your crew that you kind of run with?
Well, dude, we definitely just did a show with Braden Stewart and that kid.
Bro, he's unbelievable. Phenomenal. One of the most underrated acts, like,
shreds guitar. Fucking can write a great song. And not only that, dude, he can sing.
His voice is unbelievable.
And his bass player and him pulling harmonies, bro.
Yeah.
Dude. I literally booked them on our show to open for us just so I could watch it. Like, I was like, shit, y'all get paid, we get paid, and I get to watch a free concert? All right. Like, yeah that's the whole reason we're doing this.
And he's another young gun.
Dude, or he's so young.
He's a baby.
Yeah, and I was like, how old are you? And he's like, oh, you know, I can't remember now, but he's like younger than I am. I'm like, dude, you're a freaking child. Like, this is how I felt when I walked into rooms and people looked at me like that.
Yeah.
And then I will shout out the kid, Jackson Malone. I don't know if you've heard of him.
I haven't heard of Jackson yet.
So Jackson Malone is, this kid's going to freak out. I love that goober. He's like my—he's like the little brother of the music
scene. I'm gonna give him a follow from the Raise Rowdy account right now. So
J A X O N
Malone. J A X O N Malone.
Yeah,
I like it.
Just like Post.
Yeah. So where? So I'm guessing he's a Texas guy.
Yeah, he's actually going to Stephenville. He's in Tarleton. So he's you know, he's a good kid and he's really rocking, dude.
Shout out to Jackson and his Instagram bio, Jackson Malone Band. You know what the first line in his Instagram bio is?
No,
Tony Hawk Pro Skater Music from Texas.
Sounds about right, dude. Like,
I'm gonna follow that kid right now. That's dude. Sick. It looks like he's out there. They're out there playing shows and shit,
dude.
Too.
He's getting in with some good names. He's a young kid, but he's really, dude. He's hungry, and he's trying hard. So I'll give him a shout out, man. He's a good kid.
Playing like Twisted J and Blue Light and Backyard and all those spots. So no, it's good. That's good to know, man.
Dude, and he just turned 18. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, he's. Like you're becoming an older brother to guys where you've been the younger brother for pretty much all of your career.
When we talk about Jackson,
it's wild, isn't it?
Yeah, when I talk about Jackson, that's my little brother right there. And dude, he's just such a energetic kid who's like really into like the shoegaze and like Buckethead and those bands. So like his like where I think my stuff's rocking, his stuff is like youngest daughter. Like it is just grungy, heavy, sounds sad as fuck, but he's pretty solid.
That's awesome.
And he's growing up, kid. He's gonna be real big.
See, isn't it cool to be a part of a scene?
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's like you were in that spot and now you're putting out a record and you're going on freaking news channels here in Nashville and have gotten to see the country, doing what you love, out in the bus with the guys, and now you're getting to watch kids like him come up and
oh, and it's cool,
watch Braden, and they're looking up to you.
Yeah, and it means the world to us too. Like I think a lot of like especially why Texas is coming back to being so nice and, you know, supportive is I think for a while, so many of us were like, we can't even get a show. Like, why do they hate us? They don't hate us. They just don't know us. Or like,
yeah,
it felt like so unsupportive at some time. So I think now we've all been like, look, we got to bring it back. And so the second we can, we're like, oh, we're going to get our homies on this show. We're going to get so-and-so on this show and just try to like build them up as big as we can.
That's fucking awesome. I love that, man.
It's fun because like there's so many events like where we all get to go at the same time and like, you know, if you don't pull your homie on now, a few years down the road when you're at a festival and you don't know nobody, it's no fun. But if you got your homie coming with you, it's a big party. It's a big family reunion. So
yeah, man. I mean, I think back to like Co and Parker co-headlining those club shows together in the day. And they couldn't be sonically more different.
Yeah, but they killed.
But they killed, man. That was a chapter in country music, rock music, and Texas music history when guys were going around. What were some of the concerts you remember going to back in the day, like before you were doing it yourself?
Dude, so my local hometown, there's a thing called Brady Goat Cook-Off. We got to play the 50th anniversary, but I remember, I think it was, I don't know if it was 2017. I was a freshman, sophomore in high school, whatever the math is on that, and Co Wetzel came to our town. And so our town is 5,000, or the Brady is 5,000 people. There was a band the night before that had 3,000 people show up. Co Wetzel brought 15,000.
Wow.
That was one of my first concerts, and I was like, holy cow.
Yeah, that was the Noise Complaint record.
Yeah, and I was like, you can do this. Like, this is crazy. People were going nuts. He's telling these crazy stories about some lady named Irene at the gas station who took his money. And we're like, I was like, this is cool. And then I went to watch Cody West and Carson Jeffrey. And hardly knew who Cody West at the time was. But I knew who Carson Jeffrey was. Ranch Girl Dream was like my thing. I thought I was like a country cowboy kid. And Cody screamed on Let You Go. And I was like, it just twisted my brain all up. I'm like, okay, we got people like Co and Cody doing these songs that are like, I didn't know we could do those here. Like, I thought I had to like wear a pearl snap and sing country songs. And you mean I can actually go up there and scream? Like, in.
Yeah.
And so those are some of my first concerts. And then obviously I got to watch Seether in Lubbock. Front row, so like
that was
life changing for me.
Isn't it so cool that all that music's coming back? Like those bands that we grew up listening to, and then they were on like a little bit of a hiatus, and now they're back.
Dude, I mean, like you talked about Creed, dude. For them to have been like, they've always been big, but like that they're so big now, and like Nickelback, dude. I mean, they've been hated
Limp
for
Bizkit,
years,
bro.
Limp Bizkit, dude. Like of all
Korn
people,
is back touring. Dude, System of a Down is back. Like that whole era.
It's nuts, but it's so sick. And like 3 Days Grace has their old singer back on with them.
Yeah, dude. The show is back. I'm hoping I can get to one of those.
Dude, I literally told myself, if I can catch a Seether show and a Stain show, I can die happy.
Yeah.
And so I've got the Seether one. Now, Aaron Lewis has been doing his Stateliner stuff.
I actually, you're going to hate me for this. I got to see Stained about a month and a half ago at a casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey, with our boys from Lakeview opening up for them.
And we did a show with Lakeview, dude. Yeah. And that was, they're sick as fuck. But yeah, no.
Stained was unbelievable. Dude. Seeing the original band up there and seeing Aaron do the Stain thing and him just go into screaming, like it was awesome.
Dude, it's nuts. And I love that band, dude. And like, I'm really big in the heavy stuff too, like Wage War and those boys. So like, it's cool.
Yeah, man, you're coming up at a cool time where you can kind of do whatever the fuck you want. And like, then, there's no labels on it.
Yeah, like you can be. I've always told people too, because they're like, what genre is it? What is it? Is it country? You know? And I grew up in a household where if it didn't have steel and fiddles, it wasn't country music. Yeah. It's noise. Yeah. And so I've always said, man, like, you call it what you want, you put it in your playlist, and whatever playlist you put it in, we'll call it that. So. Yeah. It's just better for you to pick what it is. Because if I tell you one thing and I'm wrong, everybody hates you for it. And so it's like, well, we're going to throw it in the rock playlist. Because, and I will say, like, the thing is now is being rock. Because if you call it country and you're not, you know, Hudson and Braxton and the honky-tonk boys like, you know, Zach Top, everybody's like, oh, this ain't country. But if you call it rock and it's a little country, but it's a lot of rock, everybody's like, bring it in. We're letting it come in.
I mean, there's so many festivals that I've seen Nickelback at country festivals. I believe like we will see Creed at some country festivals next year.
Oh, I'm sure.
Limp Bizkit can cross over. Like, the country fans are also rock fans, and the rock fans, as they get older, if they're, some of them are like, man, fuck country music, but they over time, like, it crosses over.
Dude,
you know?
It those two genres have been at like it's almost like there's been a wall up for so long, and they've been trying to jump it every now and then, and now it's kind of like getting torn down. So like,
yeah.
There's just so much crossover and bleed through, but it's super cool.
It's a perfect time for a guy like you to be coming up, and all your buddies that you were just talking about to be coming up too, man.
It's like, great, dude, and we love every bit of it.
What's it like coming up in the TikTok age where social media and that becomes a part of what you have to do as an artist? Because it wasn't that way like 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
I loved TikTok originally when it first came out. It was somewhere I could go have fun and be a goofball. But... it's tough, dude. There's so many great artists like that Joshua Sloan kid that just came out.
Oh, yeah.
Holy cow. I mean, he was doing 100,000, you know, person shows, and he had no songs out.
Yeah.
So it's like, I see the benefits in TikTok. It's just, I just hope it doesn't oversaturate the world too much. Because it's like, you go on there, and there's not a day I go on TikTok I can't scroll and see somebody singing. And I have found some great singers. But then, you know, it's just battling everybody else. It takes this competition in Texas and expands it. Like, okay, there's so many more people here. I didn't know there were so many people writing. You know, like, it's cool, and it's really beneficial if you can figure out how to work it.
Yeah, what does your TikTok look like? Like, what kind of, I personally don't get on there much. I'm really bad about it.
Dude, you and me both.
Because with Rage Rowdy, I need to be, Nick and I talk about how we need to be better about our TikTok. Like, the Instagram and Facebook shit, we got that down.
Yeah, I love Instagram, dude, but TikTok, man, my TikTok's going to be a direct crossover when I post on Instagram Reels. And it's just the music. It might be me occasionally covering a song. Rarely do I cover songs. But it's just me playing music. I would like for it eventually to have a YouTube channel where I like vlog the road days, you know.
Yeah.
I think that'd be fun as hell, and you know, obviously clip them for TikTok. But I think as we get busier with shows, I think my TikTok will be a little more popping. But right now, it's just we get a content day, we post them on there, and we hope people like it.
Yeah, man, that's the method that folks are doing.
Oh, yeah. So, and people have got it figured out, dude.
Yes. Oh, no. Trust me. I know, bro. What do you like doing when you come out here to Nashville? Where are some of your spots you like hanging out at?
I'm not a big goer out. I do like being a homebody. But y'all put me on to Losers. I love the hell out of that place. Yeah. So
you got to come check out where we're at.
I do need to come.
I don't know what you're doing tonight, but...
I do head home today.
You do? Okay. Yeah. But well, I'm glad we're able to squeeze this in. But yeah, we do our Wednesdays over at Odie's now, mm-hmm. and it's the production just is insane.
I definitely have to come check it out.
Green room for the artists. Like, It's solid, man. It's much bigger stage.
Hey, with that,
like a
we'll
big,
take that.
Big video wall, really good sound guys. Like, oh, yeah. There's a barricade in between, like, the stage. Like, it feels like a venue.
That's cool, dude.
So,
like,
we'll
I
have
remember,
to get you and the boys again. It's been too long since we've had you.
For sure, dude. I remember we played Losers with a five-piece band, and my guitar player kept stepping backwards and unplugging my bass player's pedal board.
Yeah.
And like he'd have to bend down there and plug it back in. Yeah. He's like, whole show, and we played like five songs, but it went so quick and there was so much going on. So I mean, we would be pumped to play a little bigger stage. And we're actually a 4-piece now.
Yeah.
We're going 4-piece right now.
So much room for activities.
There's so much room now. We could probably run around Loser stage. But yeah. Definitely could smash a car, good guitar too. But.
Yeah, yeah, dude. I remember when we had the Matt Hankins boys, they were like, So five songs. They're like, is there a time limit? And I'm like, no, you boys do whatever. And they jammed out and played like 7 minutes a song, and it was like a 35 minute set. It was just solo on solo on solo. I'm like, you Texas rock boys are just built different,
dude,
man.
Dude, I remember, dude, my favorite story to tell. It's like when I played y'all's round for Raise Rowdy, I remember they wouldn't let me in the bar until 15 minutes before my set. So I had to listen to everybody from the Sprinter van we rented.
Yeah.
And I was like, thank God we rented this thing. I'd be sitting out here in the cold. Finally go inside, and first thing I do on stage is like, how y'all been? I haven't been able to hear everybody before me because I've been outside fucking partying in the parking lot. Flipped off everybody, and all you see is two massive X's. And everybody was like, oh, that's where he's been, this guy. And then we came out heavy as could be.
Yes.
And had my bass player screamed at the time. Yep. We sang about coke, you know, side bitch. Like, we were just fucking, like, here to kick teeth in. And, dude, it was funny because I think that night y'all were really rolling more of a country set.
Oh, yeah.
And then we came in and just freaking blew.
I love to stick a rock act in the middle of like an all country or even like a country pop and then stick you guys either in the middle. I think, did you guys close that night?
I think we were in the middle. I think there were two other people after us. And dude, it was crazy. And then the people, they were like, oh, you can stay in the bar anytime. Like, you're cool.
I'm wondering who else I had. I'll have to look at my thingy real quick. You can search in the photo for your name when it was on the... was on the flyer. Oh, wow. This is way back. Holy shit. Yeah, this is when we had the casino logo, which was really cool. Yeah, it was Jacob Hackworth, Will Jones, Nathan Wilson, you, Moose Miller, and our boy Chris Andrucci, who's still one of the house bands over there. We call him Foreign Wallen because he's from Scotland and he has a mullet.
That's right. So, I do remember that.
Yeah, Andrucci. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, dude, what a night that was. That was March... It was March 20th of 2024.
Yeah, that's
so it was
crazy.
It was well over a year ago, which
that's
is
something.
Nuts. So we'll have to get you boys back out here,
for
man.
Sure, dude.
Like, it'll be sick, dude. Well, what are you hoping people feel and get when they listen to this record?
Dude, we've been playing the songs. Like I said, I play Who I Am acoustically, and one of the things I say every night is, if you leave here and you don't know any of the other songs, or you've forgotten what we played, just remember this one. So I really hope people listen to Who I Am and like they. The song itself, too, and just, like, really just listen. Like, feel what I'm saying, because, like, I wrote it for you just as much as I wrote it for me to, like, just sit there and kind of, like, ache. Yeah. I want you to hurt. Like, I really wrote these songs to hurt, because, I mean, at the end of the day, like, you like to bottle stuff up, but the one place you can escape is a song, and so I just really hope people listen to the record and, like, just sit there and dive the songs and listen to them deeply. Don't just skip to the never again and the overused. Like, literally listen
to the
songs.
It's a record. You got to go top to bottom.
Exactly.
And then if you really like it, go another way through. Yeah, or if you don't like it, go another way through. Yeah. Maybe you'll like it on the second time. Be like, oh, that's what he's talking about.
Exactly.
That's sick, dude. And then what's something that you would tell that that 18-year-old kid that's just starting to put out music? Like, what would you tell younger you back in 2021 when you first start putting out those songs and you're thinking you got to be a honky-tonker and now you're a rocker, you've gotten a tour around the country, you've got a record out, you've got a team, you've got a label, you're getting to do some big shit at a young age?
Dude, if I could go back and tell my 18-year-old self, I'd tell him to pull out my dad's CDs again, listen to Marilyn Manson, and then remind him that he could actually do some heavy shit. So, because I could have skipped a lot of steps. Had just gone straight to where I wanted to be.
Yeah, all those steps build you to where you are, though, man.
Dude, I'm grateful.
It's part of your story.
There's been lots of ups and downs. There's been, you know, trying to figure out what we're going to do here with what we're going to do there. And I'm appreciative of everything. I wouldn't take any of it, wouldn't replace any of it. But I definitely would have told myself, hey, like, you can be who you want to be now. Yeah. You don't have to wait.
That's awesome, man. Well, hey, man, I'm proud watching you go. Like, watching from knowing you for the past, coming up on, like, 2 years here soon, to where you are now, mm-hmm. and this record coming out, and you're just, you're so confident, and the product's getting so polished to yeah. where you want it to be, and you're saying the shit that you've been wanting to say all along, yes, and sir. The fact that you're at 22 years old and comfortable doing that is huge, man.
Oh,
seriously,
yeah.
man. I'm excited for where things go from here.
Me like, too, dude.
This record, I think, is going to do a lot of big things for you. And you got to tour a bunch this year. And I think those dates will be double or tripling, like you said.
Get to
100 shows, man. Take that RV everywhere, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Man. Appreciate the hell out of you. We're going to send you home with an 8-pack of the Surfside. You can try and crush those before you get on the plane. I mean, if you're checking a bag, you can probably throw them in, take them back to Texas with you. And we got a bunch of hats and shit over there, too.
Awesome, well, dude.
Y'all be sure to look up our man, Aaron McBee, Who I Am. It comes out on December the 5th. Go out there. There will be time for when this episode airs for you guys to pre-save it and pre-add it, whichever way you lean. If you're Apple Music or Spotify, give him a follow on all the channels and be on the lookout, because he will be on the road next year, probably coming to a city near you, and you're going to want to get out there and see him and the boys rock out. For more on us, visit RaisedRowdy.com. For my man Aaron, I'm Matt Burrell. This has been Outside the Round.
Never been the kind for staying one place for too long. I ain't never been the best at saying I love you to a girl I love. Only got a couple tricks on my sleeve, they usually just make them leave.